Podcast with Aaron and Polly. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And it's just the two of us all over again for the first time.
I know. It's like, it's like 14 years ago up in here.
That's right. Or 15.
15. It's like 2000.
I had to do math.
It's like 2009 up in here.
Wow. It's like there's a new Star Trek movie in the theaters, and it's crazy. It's crazy town.
I mean, what were the greatest hits of 2009? What do you think, Aaron? What were the greatest hits of 2009?
Are you talking about comic books or just anything?
Anything. Well, to get our listeners in the
2009 mood. I liked me some Star Trek 2009. I am not a Trek purist in that regard. I thought that was an entertaining movie.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. All right. That was a big one. I mean, we had X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, it was a good movie too. I like
we
that.
We had The Fourth Kind, the first Human Centipede movie. The Proposal featuring Ryan Reynolds.
And I think that we may have been on the road to, but not yet in, Blackest Night.
Yes. We have Watchmen in theaters, Aaron. That was a big one.
Yeah. Before we got the improved director's cut.
Yeah. And then, you know, for all of you just listening to the radio, you were probably listening to Boom Boom Pow by the Black Eyed Peas and Poker Face by Lady Gaga.
I know I was.
Yeah. Single Ladies. Yeah.
All the single ladies.
So now that we've brought you back to 2009, let's bring you back to today.
There we go.
Because today, or this week, on Amazon Prime, Batman Caped Crusader, the entire season dropped on Amazon Prime Video.
I have a complaint about that. When I punched into Prime to watch Caped Crusader, it took me to episode 10. It
didn't take me to so you just watched the finale instead?
Well, I was like, let me just make sure I'm on the right episode, because it just really kind of starts in media res. And I'm like, okay, let me just go back. Let me go back 9 episodes and we'll try it this funny. Way.
I saw episode 1. So a little bit of history lesson. This has nothing to do with 2009. Mm-hmm. Is that Batman Caped Crusader was actually licensed to originally be a Max premiere before the Discovery buyout. And so, you know, they had brought in J.J. Abrams, who had partnered with Matt Reeves, the director and writer of the new Batman movie, to partner with Bruce Timm and create this new Batman animated series. When Discovery came in, and now it's like Discovery Time Warner, or Discovery Warner Brothers, or whatever the hell the company's called, came in. They said, we're not going to focus on original animated content for Max, but if anyone else wants it, you can buy it from us. So Amazon Prime swooped in and saved this show from the same chopping block that Batgirl and that new Looney Tunes movie, ended up in. And so now we have all 10 episodes streaming on Amazon Prime. I only got a chance to see the first, Aaron.
Same.
Okay.
Other than the glimpse of episode 10.
Other than that. I was pretty excited for this show, I will say.
We're both Bruce Timm fans. I think that you are probably a larger Batman animated series fan than I am, but I am also a big fan. But I think that you are a bigger fan. I'm not calling you fat, Paul, but
I probably do. Yeah, I'm probably bigger. Yeah,
I would just say robust.
Robust. I'm a fluffy fan. I will say, you know, I am more of a Paul Dini fan than I am a Bruce Timm fan. Bruce Timm certainly brought all the visuals to Batman the Animated Series, but I think the storylines that people really remember as iconic from that series were more Paul Dini and Alan Burnett, and Dwayne McDuffie, you know, once it turned into Justice League and stuff like that, than they were Bruce Timm. Because I find that when Bruce Timm is the head writer, we end up with things like Batman and Harley Quinn, like that garbage movie that came out a few years back. Now, that being said, I thought the first episode of Batman Caped Crusader was solid. I have some gripes.
Oh, I only have one. I don't have some. I have one.
Okay.
One gripe. First, let me say, it was so nice to see an animated Batman show for grownups. I really appreciated that I didn't feel like it was aimed at someone, you know, in their preteens. That was really nice. It was nice to feel like I was an audience that they took seriously. There were, you know, a lot of changes in the interpretation of characters. I think I'm okay with all of them.
I will tell you that's so. Just sorry to interrupt you, Aaron.
Yeah, go ahead.
But just because you brought it up, I will say I think that's my gripe. And I'm not normally a person who cares about gender bending or race swapping. I don't know, characters in media, like whatever. Generally, it feels like every single character was changed for the sake of change. It's not as if they.
I will say that I recognize that yeah. I feel like, you know, some of them I felt like were very purposeful in the design, and it felt like, okay, I understand what they're going for here. Like Penguin, right? The fact that, you know, Penguin is a woman, Oswalda Cobblepot. I liked her. I thought she was,
but I struggled with the fact that, like, why did they change her? Like, I think it was just like every character other than Batman. And if you're going to go that path, then change Batman as far as I'm concerned, you know, but like Batman's still your white dude and everyone else has to change.
I will tell you that I really enjoyed the Penguin. The Penguin is usually a character I'm usually pretty lukewarm on.
Yeah.
But I liked this interpretation. I like that she is a great big robust woman that, you know, is just super flamboyant. Right.
Played by Minnie Driver.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those, the minute she started talking, I was like, wow, you know, who would have played a really good Oswalda Cobblepot back in the day would have been Major Barrett Roddenberry. Yeah. I really feel that tone. But I liked her. This isn't my complaint, but I had a moment where it bothered me, but I can live with it. It was the fat Alfred.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't understand this. I don't understand that choice. I also note Alfred and Bruce don't have as close of a relationship, as warm of a relationship, just because, you know, Bruce doesn't call him Alfred. He calls him Pennyworth.
Yeah.
That also took me back. I have a hard time believing that Alfred could be, you know, a roundish kind of guy simply for the fact that, you know, of what we know about Alfred's backstory. But of course, this guy's backstory could be very different.
Could be different. But I do feel like just by nature of supporting Batman, Alfred probably wouldn't be a fat man.
And exactly. Here's the thing.
We are robust. Well, I'm robust, Aaron. Aaron's, as we've established, thinner than I am.
this is not true.
But certainly have no problem with larger characters. But
yeah, I'm not fat shaming anybody. But yeah,
but it feels a little odd that like every single interpretation of Alfred
ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Commissioner Gordon has changed weights and colors, but Alfred has been consistently, you know, and which makes sense based on his character. And to your point, the backstory of this character may ultimately be altered. We're only one episode in.
Right.
It's not that one didn't bother me as much, to your point. I didn't find it so much a complaint other than in the context of why did they make
that choice? Well, and I think I would have been more comfortable with an Alfred who was a woman or an Alfred who was a different race than making Alfred still a white guy, but fat, you know? And again, I'm not fat shaming anybody. It's just like, that's a strange choice.
Yeah.
But you know, the issue that I had, my only complaint that I had, because I really enjoyed this first episode. And I also I'll point out something else that really struck me. Many of the Batman, the animated series, you know, from back in the 90s episodes are very formulaic. You know, there is always this big fight scene at the end, and it's always kind of the same beats. And to a degree that gets really wearisome, you know, as you're watching it, you know, particularly in streaming environments where you can binge, you know, you're like, oh my God, here we go. Can I just fast forward through this part? You know, because it just becomes like a car chase every time. I appreciated that the fight scene was over and done really fast so that they could move on to the story. And that's what it's one of the things I really like about, the show just in this first episode was how fast the story got told. Yeah. Right. That's that economy of storytelling that I just love, that it didn't feel strung out, even though clearly we're going to have a serialized story this season. It doesn't feel like it's going to be one and done.
Yeah, but I kind of like that, you know, cause I don't think we've seen that.
I agree.
Type of animated program before.
But my concern about serialized storytelling is that, you know, it generally takes something that would have been told in an episode and stretches it out over the course of a season. This felt like we were moving, and I liked that. But my complaint, my much promised complaint, I hated the opening credit music. It was
really?
It was such a contrast to the rest of the show. I thought the music for the show was great. Batman's always had great music in the animated series. And I just really thought that the music and opening title sequence were really sort of underwhelming.
I would agree. I would say they were underwhelming. I didn't mind the music, but I felt like the sequence itself, especially given what we've seen, and I'm not just referring to the original iconic Batman the Animated Series, but I'm referring to some of the shows that have, you know, come since, have pretty kinetic or interesting opening sequences. I feel like this one is probably one I'll skip. Yeah. Unless they change it in every episode, which I don't know. But
well, and I don't know if this was just an opening sequence for the first episode, and maybe it'll be different the second, having not watched the second. But I was just like, that was pretty lackluster. In fact, I thought it, you know, you had this kind of really interesting cold open, and I thought it kind of sucked the energy out of the room.
Yeah,
I was just like, that's just a really weird choice. And the cold open is a little weird because, you know, as much as I enjoyed it, the cold open was weird in that Batman loses consciousness and then wakes up and you're still haven't gotten to the title card yet.
Yeah.
So I thought that, I was like, that's weird. And I started wondering at that point, is there not going to be a title card? You know, is this show just gonna run? And then, you know, inexplicably it shows up later on. But
yeah, anyway. No, I mean, ultimately, and I will say the voice work, we've already mentioned Minnie Driver. I like the voice work. Hamish Linklater, something like that. Mm-hmm. Hamish Linklater. I'm sure I'm butchering his name. Does a really good Bruce Wayne Batman. You know, he's an actor who he's been in a bunch of stuff, but really what I know him most from is the TV show Midnight Mass.
Mm-hmm.
He was Father Paul, the main character. Have you seen Midnight Mass, Aaron?
I have not.
It is so good. It is so damn good. And he is excellent in that show. So it was kind of cool, you know, hearing him as Batman's voice. But, you know, the voice work was pretty uniformly solid.
Yeah, I agree.
I would say.
I liked the show. I also liked how sort of unrelenting and unforgivingly violent it was. I mean, there is a scene where Batman just runs over people with the Batmobile. I mean, just unapologetically just wipes them out with the Batmobile. I'm like, that's pretty badass.
Yeah. I will be definitely finishing the you know, watching all 10 episodes. I do enjoy it. Now, what I've already seen is that, you know, some of the, you know, basically every character other than Batman has gone through some type of change. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if, I mean, again, it's not so much that it bothered me. It's that when it's everyone, it felt like it was done without reason. You know, and I'm all for, you know, diversity and that kind of thing, but it just felt like it didn't really add anything to the characters. They were just drawn differently.
I did feel like it added to the Penguin. I did really enjoy. I enjoyed that she was, you know, had a nightclub routine, that folks were kind of, you know, really sopping up her big girl energy.
Yeah,
I dug all of that. I liked Oswalda Cobblepot, and I loved how bad she was. Yeah. I mean, there killed is this son. She kills Spoilers. She kills yeah, she kills her son because she believes that he has ratted them out to another crime family. And so, you know, drowns him, you know, has him, you know, pushed into a bag. I mean, that's cold when mom has the bag thrown over your head and then, you know, you get dropped in the ocean. But, you know, she says, and he was my favorite, you know, I mean, that yeah. just, I love that, that and the, mama doesn't hold a grudge for long. I really dug that. I thought she was a great character, and I'm looking forward to see what else they do. So I did think that worked, and you know, I know that online, I think there's been a lot of noise about Commissioner Gordon and Barbara Gordon. None of that bothers me at all. I do feel like a lot of it has changed for change's sake, and I just hope they do something meaningful with all of it as the series progresses.
Yeah, agreed.
So yeah, good show. I recommend
it. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to reading to watching the rest, and we'll certainly have a recap once we've finished it all up.
I bet I finished this week.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, at 20 minutes an episode, it is it'll be a quick binge watch.
Yep.
But before we move on to comic books, Aaron.
Uh-oh.
Just because I forgot to put it on the outline, but I feel like we have to talk about it because it's just you and I, so we don't have to worry about boring Wayne and Andrew. I want to talk about Yellowstone, Aaron.
Jellystone.
Uh-huh. You know, we have long talked about our love for Yellowstone. It's an abusive relationship, really,
because really
they really just keep abusing us with shows with no endings and, you know, Kevin Costner now leaving the program. But it has been talked about this week that there is a new Yellowstone spinoff, perhaps different from the Yellowstone spinoff featuring Matthew McConaughey, that is rumored to also include some of the remaining cast members like Beth and Rip and some of those characters reprising their roles. This is a different one that is tentatively named The Madison, that will be featuring a wealthy matriarch, Stacy Clyborn, and her family as they leave New York City and head to Montana in the wake of her husband and her brother-in-law's tragic deaths in a plane crash, which
no,
perhaps this is who will take over the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my guess is that they will follow Rip and those other characters to Texas,
right,
where Matthew McConaughey will be the patriarch of the show.
Yeah.
And that this show will perhaps take over the Yellowstone Ranch and you know, feature these characters. But the current rumored cast is headed up by Michelle Pfeiffer, Kurt Russell, and Patrick J. Adams from the show Suits, as well as Bo Garrett.
Patrick Adams seems an odd choice to me.
I don't know him because I don't watch Suits, or I've never seen Suits.
I have watched Suits, and, you know, I would never characterize him as an actor you would put in a Western, and maybe he's going to surprise me, but, you know, certainly Kurt Russell's got that rugged thing going on.
My only concern about the Kurt Russell thing is that he may be the husband referenced in the description who dies in a plane crash, and that we're only going to get a short bit in flashbacks with him because, you know, they're also actively filming Monarch season 2.
Yeah. I was going to say they're shooting that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I hope that's not the case, because I would love to have a Michelle Pfeiffer, Kurt Russell TV show. I think they are both
nothing not to love there, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
So I'm excited. You know, Yellowstone returns November 10th for its final half season or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm curious to see what they'll do without Kevin Costner.
I'm certain I'll be hate watching it.
Yeah, I will tell you, I feel like Paramount had the prime opportunity when Kevin Costner's Horizon shit the bed at the box office to say, Kevin, we'll fund your passion project. Just give us a month of filming on goddamn Yellowstone.
Yeah.
And let's wrap this thing up. I feel like that was a missed opportunity. Maybe they had those negotiations and they fell through, but it feels like low hanging fruit to just say, Kevin, we'll finish your movies. We'll finish all four of your stupid movies.
Exactly.
Just give us a month. Just give us a month on Yellowstone.
Yeah, because Paramount Plus needs content.
Yeah.
So,
And Horizon's pretty solid. It's available for on demand right now, but I quite enjoyed it. It's it's a little generic-y westerny, but I'm looking forward to seeing part two whenever someone picks it up to actually release it out into the world, because apparently it's not going to be in theaters as originally planned.
Yeah. So, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Annihilation 2099.
You know, Aaron.
Sir.
This was a big week for Mr. Dracula in Marvel Comics, because he was featured in as key in both Annihilation 2099 and in Bloodhunt number 5. So let's talk about Annihilation 2099. I got caught up on all five. Well, I had read the first issue of Annihilation, but I had not read the others. I fell asleep reading issue 3 last night, but I just because I was exhausted.
Right.
But I've read them all now. And so, you know, Annihilation 2099 has really been, for me as a series, very interesting. Some of the books I've genuinely enjoyed. Some of them I've enjoyed a little less, like the one with the Red Hulk. I was like, doesn't feel like much really happened here. It didn't really feel like, it kind of felt like a backup story rather than a main story. What I found interesting is that none of them, other than the last page of all of them, led up to issue 5.
Right.
So I don't know if maybe this was all set up for what they've now advertised as Conquest 2099. And, you know, we'll see these characters. But I will say my favorite issue was actually issue 4, because I loved the new interpretation of the Silver Surfer as the Herald of Mephisto.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was going to think about that, because, you know, I think I've mentioned on a previous show that I'm not a big fan of the you know, traditional Silver Surfer versus Mephisto, because that's a recurring matchup that you would see in the 616 books. And so I've never been a big fan of that, but I did think that they executed that storyline really well in issue 4. I liked the new interpretation and design of the Silver Surfer, and kind of enjoyed the dynamic between he and Mephisto. I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah, it was sad to see Eve Warlock like floating dead in space. Ron Lim is probably like, "What the hell?"
Yeah,
but not Ron Lim, Ron Mars. Well, both, really. Mars and Ron Lim. Probably like, what the hell? But no, Annihilation 2099. So all four books, the last pages have been setting up Dracula, you know, this Dracula throughput into, you know, thread, which really gets panned out into a full issue written by the same writer as the rest of the books, whose name escapes me right now, but I'll get to it. But, for me, the important part was that the art was by
Steve Orlando.
Yeah. With art by Dale Eaglesham, who, you know, that guy, love that guy and his previous work on, like, the Hulk and
Fantastic Four. Yeah.
So I was like, ooh, Dale Eaglesham, that's a name I haven't seen in a full-length book in a while. So it was cool to see him return.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, how did you feel about the ending of Annihilation 2099?
I really loved this book. I was intrigued earlier in the series with the Dracula in space, you know, Dracula 2099. I like that the interpretation of this Dracula is more like the Marv Wolfman, Gene Colan Dracula from the 70s and in the early 80s. I just very much enjoyed it. I liked how science fiction-y the story was, and it was very much sort of Weyland Yutani sort of, let's see if we can harvest some of this alien vampire DNA, you know, and, of course that never works out well. People have really got to pay attention that this shit never works out.
Yeah. They could have watched a movie 100 years earlier to tell them this wasn't
exactly
work out.
Yeah, this is a bad thing, but you know, I love how it kind of proceeds and how, you know, Dracula's using his various vampire powers to get over on the society, and then, you know, to revenge himself on that society that has tortured him and his vampire servants, mm-hmm. you know, I it was a lot of fun. I loved the bit where he senses this creature also imprisoned within the complex, and he goes, and that winds up being his ride.
I
thought this was a really fun book. I like what it's setting up. It really is queuing up for, you know, Conquest 2099, which is coming later this year. I dug it. I was excited for this book at the beginning of it. I was excited throughout. I think this is a perfect summer comic book. There's something's always happening in it. The story moves super fast. I mean, this was just five issues, and we had new characters introduced in every single issue. And even though each of these stories was independent of the other, except for the connective tissue, and you do hear some references to characters this last issue, I thought this worked out really well. I really enjoyed it. Now, I had no expectations going in and was just pleasantly surprised every time I turned a page.
And I think we will, you know, what I'm understanding is that the characters introduced here will be carried over into Conquest 2099 in October. So, you know, we've had Wolverine as Nova. We've gotten the new Star-Lord, the new Silver Surfer, the new Red Hulk, who is really like a product of Ego, the Living Planet, against Dracula. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that sets up a really interesting story thread. I'm looking at the announcement now that, you know, Steve Orlando will be continuing as the writer, and some of the same artists will continue into the 2099 as well. So it's looking, I picked up the first story after you guys talked about it, because I really didn't have an interest in it. Yeah. I don't know why, I just didn't. 2099 is so up and down for me that I was like, eh. But, you know, you guys really loved the first issue, so I picked it up. I'm like, okay, that was actually really good. And the second issue wasn't quite as good as the first. And, you know, like, but it, you know, like I said, not necessarily level quality of all books, but they all had something to enjoy and were setting up an interesting content, you know, status quo. And the way it ended was great. So I'm very much looking forward to Conquest 2099 in October.
Me too. I can't wait. But Paul, I know you have been chomping at the bit.
Yeah, chomping.
To talk to me about Bloodhunt, and you were just wildly disappointed.
I am wildly disappointed that frickin' Wayne and Andrew, my cohorts
in Bloodhunt
love, aren't here. So I'll talk about it briefly this week, and you know, maybe when we're back all together on the mics, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Bloodhunt. You know, to your point about Perfect, I have felt as if Bloodhunt is one of Marvel's best crossovers since Infinity, since Jonathan Hickman's Infinity, in that the heroes, you know, what it set up of this story, you know, it felt like there were major stakes and tragedies and things like that. And, you know, big moments to root for and get excited, big screen action. It felt like, to your point, a summer movie. Now, in the end, I will say, when it came to actual deaths in the Marvel Universe, the stakes were pretty much minimal. Some of the characters that we thought were dead weren't really dead, and you know, some of the characters that were turned into vampires were unturned. So, I mean, I think, you know, the stakes were relatively minor in the grand scheme of things as far as that is concerned. However, Aaron, there are some interesting things set up at the end of this book. And I am normally not a fan of your major summer crossover, literally just setting up your next crossover. But huge things happen in this book that will actually get me interested in the Marvel in a couple of Marvel Universe books that I probably don't even read now, but may check out just to see what happens next. So one, you know, so Blade has been infected or possessed by Varney, the first vampire, in this book. And, you know, so he, you know, basically they defeat him and, you know, that kind of thing. But some characters have been turned into vampires that by the end of the book are still vampires. And that includes Miles Morales, Spider-Man, was turned during the series and ends the book still as a vampire. But one of the other things that has been set up, that as part of what's happened, and because the Darkhold was released to block out the sun. So I'm going to get back to that, because that's a key piece of the ending here, is that, you know, they find a way to, you know, suck it back in or whatever, get rid of it, and the sun's back out. But vampires can now walk in the daylight as a result of the magic that happened here. So Dracula and Miles Morales are kind of teamed up at the end, you know, and walking around in the sunlight. But the biggest thing that happens in this book, Aaron, and this is why you need to read all five issues of this, is we talked at length about how Dr. Doom has figured out a way to defeat Varney and the Darkhold as part of this, and he's gathered up the sorcerers of Strange Academy to help him with this spell. And he is the only one who knows how to do it. And unfortunately, Doctor Strange cannot do it, because Doctor Strange at this point is only in his astral form, because his regular body has been turned into a vampire. So the only way to perform this spell is for Doctor Strange to relinquish the rights of Sorcerer Supreme unto Doctor Doom to perform this task. And he says, "Look, man, I'm not an idiot, but I know you'll keep your word. If you promise to give back the Sorcerer Supreme after you've saved the world, we'll do this." And Dr. Doom's like, "Yes, gotcha. As soon as I save the world, I'll give it back." Dr. Doom has become the Sorcerer Supreme. He performs his spell. The Darkhold is released. Varney is defeated. Dr. Doom has saved the day as it relates to this. And then Dr. Strange says, "Hey, man, like, okay, give it back. You said you'd give it back when you saved the world." And Dr. Doom's like, "Yes, and I have 1,000 ideas on how to save the world. I'm holding on to this until that happens." And so Dr. Doom is now the Sorcerer Supreme of the Marvel Universe. And, you know, at the end, broadcast to the world that, you know, you have one man to thank for what has happened today. Earth's new Sorcerer Supreme, Victor Von Doom. And that's how it ends, with a preview of, in November, One World Under Doom, the next major Marvel event.
I am really looking forward to One World Under Doom.
Yeah.
When I saw that pimped out a couple of weeks ago, I was just like, yeah, I'm all about One World Under Doom.
Well, it's kind of hinted that maybe Doom, you know, he doesn't admit to it, but they suspect that Doom was really the guy who was responsible for all this happening in the first place.
No, not Victor. No.
In order to get this Sorcerer Supreme, granted unto him. So the way that book ended, you know, again, I'm not normally a fan of big crossovers ending, setting up another crossover, but it was a hell of an ending. And I'm excited. The timing of this couldn't have been better, given, you know, the Robert Downey Jr. news.
Yeah, absolutely.
About Dr. Doom. And, you know, Marvel is going to ride that Dr. Doom into 2025 for the next big event. So
yeah.
I loved Blood Hunt. I loved the way it ended. I actually, because those Red Band books were not available digitally, we talked about those in a previous week, that Marvel has basically releasing R-rated versions of these issues. I ordered them online.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm actually going to get some physical comics, Aaron, delivered to me later this week. So
are they shipped flat, Paul?
They better be. But, Blood Hunt was a ton of fun, and really enjoyed what it set up and what could be coming next for the Marvel Universe. So highly recommended.
Well, I tell you a book that I really enjoyed, even though it came out 2 weeks ago, I read it this week. Jason Aaron's turn on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, we talked about this a little while back.
Issue number one, and I gotta tell you, it has been since the original Eastman and Laird run that I have read a TMNT book. So it's been that long.
Yeah.
But I loved this book. I mean, Jason Aaron's got certainly his finger on Raphael, who the book centers around. I enjoyed it's a very gritty take. I mean, imagine Shawshank Redemption, but with a Ninja Turtle. It was. I don't want to say it was fun.
No, because it was very serious.
Yeah, but I mean, the contrast of seeing the Ninja Turtle moving through the prison, you know, going through the commissary, going through, you know, the prison yard, and that he is sort of the secret Avenger inside the prison, keeping the prisoners in. So, you know, there's a scene where he, you know, thwarts an escape, you know, and then it doesn't use the escape for himself. He goes back to his cell and turns out he's kind of there undercover.
Yeah. Looking for, you know, who the corrupt people, yeah. You know, corrupt prison people.
But I dug this book a lot. The artwork is gorgeous.
Artwork was really well done.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed the artwork by Joel Jones, who I'm not familiar with, but just did a remarkable job kind of capturing the tone, the atmosphere. There are flashbacks to when Raphael was with his brothers, and clearly there has been a falling out, but you know, there are these sort of like whimsical reminiscences of those, and I felt like that tone is captured nicely and is a nice juxtaposition between the dark grittiness of the story that was told here. I love this. I can't wait for issue two.
Yeah, it was great. Jason Aaron's, you know, having a heyday. That dude, yeah. You know, he's writing the new Absolute Superman book. He's writing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, good for Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
This was great. It was a good start. You know, it sets up like, you know, okay, I think the first four issues, each one will focus on a different turtle because they've kind of been scattered to the winds. To your point, yeah. There's been some type of falling out. Very curious to see, you know, how they bring them all back together. The art by Joel Jones. The only familiarity I have with Joel Jones is I believe she was the artist on that Buffy the Vampire Slayer book from years ago, like season 8, that was written by Joss Whedon. I'm not really familiar with her art, but she did a bang-up job in this book. Lots of action. The only complaint I have is that at the end, Raphael escapes from the prison, and it felt to me as if I was missing a page or something, because in one page he's being subdued, and in the next page he's escaping the prison. We don't really see how he escapes from being actively subdued and framed for the murder of the prison warden. He just is out.
I think that they didn't find the escape route.
Yeah, I got that, but he was like actively being handcuffed, so I'm like, okay, what just happened that he was able to get out of this? So I mean, in the end, it didn't take away from my enjoyment. It just felt like I was missing a page.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great start. I'm excited. You know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a franchise and brand that I've loved for years, you know, since they first came out back in the 80s. And I just, you know, the IDW stuff, I really just didn't really get into. And even though apparently this does share the same continuity, it's not like a reboot or anything. It feels like a fresh start that as long as you know the core tenets of the characters, you'll be fine hopping in with issue one.
It was good stuff. Hey, Paul.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
We have some pretty major releases next week. So from DC Comics, we have Batman 151, which is an Absolute Power tie-in. But we also have Absolute Power number 2. Coming out from DC Comics, continuing, you know, Mark Waid and Dan Mora's big crossover event book. From Marvel Comics, we have a couple of major releases. We have Avengers issue 17, which is, you know, kind of post-Blood Hunt, post, new X-Men, you know, continuity or status quo being folded into the Avengers. Storm is going to be joining the Avengers. So it's kind of like a good jumping on point for the Avengers book. So I will actually be picking up issue 17 to see the new status quo. It's written by Jed McKay, who wrote Blood Hunt, and like I talked about, I really enjoyed it. So I'll be picking up Avengers number 17. Doctor Strange issue 18, also, you know, kind of the next steps of what has happened after relinquishing the Sorcerer Supreme to Doctor Doom. So it's kind of like a Blood Hunt epilogue. Blood Hunters number 1 will continue the story of Miles Morales as a vampire. He'll be teamed up with characters like Dagger, Elsa Bloodstone, the White Widow, and Hallow's Eve in this book. Looks like a miniseries. I'll check out the preview pages. We'll see. there's potential there. Marvel also has a big new crossover with Venom War, number one. I think I'm a little wiped out on Venom. Unless someone else picks that up, I probably won't be. But I will probably pick up Uncanny X-Men number one from Gail Simone and David Marquez, which is...
I'm intrigued by that. Number one, I love David Marquez, and I'm a big fan of Gail Simone. So yeah. I am intrigued as well.
Yeah, so I'll be picking that one up. Also from other companies, Image Comics is releasing Scarlet Issue 3, continuing that storyline that we've really been enjoying on the podcast, as well as Gatchaman number 2 from Mad Cave Studios, which we talked about the first issue at length last week on this podcast.
Yep. Good stuff. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. What did you think of Blood Hunt? What did you think of Annihilation 2099? Let us know. Send us a note at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comment on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
All right. Well, we're going to do it all over again next time. Until then, have a great week.
Take care. Ah.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.